Hi, I'm Elena.
And I'm Yasmin. Welcome to Dissecting Disney,
the podcast where we either make you loathe or love your favorite childhood movies.
Welcome back, listeners. This week, we will be talking about The Incredibles, which, for a second, both of us thought weren't part of Disney. But Elena, care to explain how it is part of Disney?
Yeah, so basically, before 2006, Disney would collaborate with Pixar, but Pixar wasn't under Disney yet. So movies such as Toy Story, Finding Nemo, and The Incredibles were still under Disney because it was a collaboration, but after 2006... Disney bought Pixar. So yeah, technically, still a Disney movie.
So the idea for The Incredibles was pitched by a guy called Brad Bird, who's Pixar's first outside director. So the movie was an animation masterpiece in itself. It was one of the first CGI movies to involve humans, which were notoriously hard to animate. And because it was so fantastic, it won two Oscars for Best Animated Feature and also Best Sound Editing. And it also holds the position for the highest opening weekend gross for a Pixar film until it's broken by Toy Story 3 in 2010. And I'm sure all of us have great memories of watching it as a kid because the movie was so great.
Mm-hmm.
We thought we'd mix it up a bit because I didn't do my homework, so... Why don't we let Elena do the summary, finally?
Yeah.
Like, 10 episodes in.
Yeah, I'm so honored. I've always wanted to have this moment. I would like to thank my mom and dad.
Okay. Incredibles summary. Go.
Okay. So, the beginning of the movie introduces this world where everyone hates superheroes because of the amount of collateral damage they have done to the world. So even though they were saving lives, they made a lot of damage. And we have our two protagonists, who are two superheroes, Elastigirl, also named Helen, and Mr. Incredible, named Bob. And they started a family together under their four secret identities and have three children, Dash, Violet, and Jack-Jack. Although Bob gets fired from his hated white-collar job, he still does superhero work on the side with Frozone to relive his old days. And Bob receives a mission after he gets fired by a woman named Mirage to destroy a savage robot on a random island. And he gets paid a lot of money. So he was told that he'll have a second mission soon. He does a lot of working out and he spends a lot of time with his family with his new high amount of money. And on his second trip, Bob finds out that Mirage works for Syndrome, who hires superheroes to fight his robots to their death to improve them. He intends to defeat his robot publicly to be rendered as a superhero and to sell his technology. Syndrome was also a former superfan of Mr. Incredible, and he wanted to be his sidekick. Bob gets kidnapped. Helen learns what Bob has been up to, sets off to the random island on a private jet where she finds Violet and Dash stowed away actually in her jet. And Syndrome sends missiles to kill them, but they survive and reach the island. And Mirage sets Bob free and tells him that his family is alive because Syndrome doesn't treat her nicely and doesn't care about her. But Helen finds Bob and goes to save the children who were chased by the guards, and they all get captured. And Syndrome leaves to set off his robot in Metroville, where they, you know, the little city center that they were in. The robot destroys Syndrome's remote control, which is sad because he can't control the robot anymore. But the family, including Frozone, defeats the robot after escaping, but Syndrome kidnaps Jack-Jack out of nowhere and out of revenge. But Jack-Jack's superpowers kicks in and he escapes. Bob throws a car at Syndrome's jet and it explodes with Syndrome in it. Technically, that's a happy ending, but they also show 3 months later the family has found a balance between a normal life and a superhero life as they face a new supervillain called the Underminer. And they all have superpowers. They're children, by the way. I didn't include that. I've been talking for so long!
That's how I feel every time I do a summary. But congratulations! You've done it. And I think you did it well. Anyway, we thought that we would start off by talking about the thing that we believe made the movie resonate a lot with So we're going to talk about family dynamics and how it's portrayed in The Incredibles, because I think for a movie targeted for young kids, the storyline, especially the ones relating to family, sibling, marriage, is quite adult-like, don't you think?
Yeah, it's quite mature for them to be talking about these situations in a simple concept for children to understand.
Exactly. So there's this quote that I found, which we will base off our discussion on. America Magazine writes, "The brilliance of the film The Incredibles is that it comically exaggerates the roles of an ideal 1960s American family. The father must be a pillar of strength, the mother flexible to the needs of her family, the daughter quiet and guarded, the son athletic, and the baby full of possibility. Throughout the film, they take up their roles and subvert them." Which is very true.
I also found a quote by Brad Bird, who was the director of the movie, and it's actually quite similar to what you just said before. So he said, "I was interested in pursuing the archetypes of the family through superheroes. When you're a dad, you're supposed to be strong for your family, so I made him super strong. Moms are pulled in a million different directions, so she stretches like taffy. Teenage girls are often insecure about themselves, so I made her strength invisibility, because I think a lot of them wish they were. And 10-year-old boys are hyperactive energy balls, and babies are unrealized potential."
I definitely see the personification of what they were supposed to be, their traditional roles in a family, in their superpowers, and how their individual arc develops in the film.
And do you know their names match, like, their superpowers as well? Like, Violet was meant to be, like, Ultraviolet. Like, how she goes invisible. Ooh. Because we can't see Ultraviolet. Dash, because fast. And Jack was meant to be, like, you know, Jack of all trades. Jack of all trades, yeah. So, that was quite interesting. Okay, do you want to talk to us about Mr. Incredible?
Yeah. So, while watching the movie, I took the most notes on Mr. Incredible just because I think his character arc was quite interesting. And I think when I was younger, I didn't realize that he was kind of a bad father for some parts of the movie. And rewatching it when I'm older, I see it in a very, like, clear point of view. So at the start of the movie, we see him play into this expected role of father. He doesn't really show his vulnerability. For example, he doesn't tell Helen, his wife, or Mrs. Incredible, that he was fired from his job. And I feel like that is a lot to do with the male ego and how it's some form of toxic masculinity. There was one particular scene which I think personifies his arc best, which is when he was driving home in the small blue car, and he's super big and muscular, and he had to, like, hunch over to fit in the car. And he gets out and he's frustrated, and he puts his hand on the door, and it makes, like, a print onto the roof of the car, and then he can't shut it. And that whole scene was, to me, it just looks like, you know, someone who has been made to shrink and fit in this, like, normal life when they're definitely extraordinary, and then he kind of screws up the car and he can't close it now. It shows how he is very unhappy with the fact that he had to let go of this super power life, superhero life that he had. He definitely has anger issues. Like, he's threw his boss out of the building. And again, the scene that I talked about earlier, he lies to his family. For example, he said to Helen that the company's sending him to a conference, but actually he's gone off to the secret jungle island with Mirage and Syndrome. And Helen finds out that he was fired 2 months after he was fired when she calls to check his hotel room number, but he was obviously lying. Regarding his character as a dad, I start realizing that he wasn't such a great dad when I watch the scene where he didn't help his wife calm his kids down at dinner. He reads the paper during dinner. He doesn't listen when Helen says that Dash got sent into the office. He broke the plate while trying to help Dash cut his meat because he was like, he wasn't being present with his family. He was thinking about how he hates his life, probably. That's what I got from the scene anyway. I feel like he was also struggling with his masculinity because he's this superhero kind of guy, and again, he's been made to take the office job. And this one quote that I read says that it's tender masculinity, which is like this macho man who's also a devout husband and father. But I think that's kind of who he becomes at the end of the movie, because at first he keeps his problems to himself and he doesn't want to seem like he's laying down a family and all of that. And it just plays into, again, like this traditional idea of what it means to be a man.
Yeah, I think being Mr. Incredible has led him to have this preconceived idea of masculinity, because all his life he had, you know, to be a superhero, and he had this idea that, you know, he's strong, he saves people. That was his masculinity. That's how he defined himself to be a man. And then when he had to revert being like an office job kind of man and have to be a husband and a father, he kind of lost that. But we do see him develop in finding his masculinity, because we can still see like these raw moments that he wants to help people. And he's not afraid to be, you know, empathetic, especially in the beginning when he's helping the little old woman with her insurance. So he's struggling in a very office environment to find like who he can be as a man. And I think we find like towards the end that he's found a good balance.
Agreed.
Moving on to Mrs. Incredible. So this was towards the beginning of the movie, right? When Elastigirl is interviewed in camera and she says that she has no intention of leaving the world saving to men. And, you know, this paints Elastigirl to be this strong trope of a superhero. And she's thought to be strong. However, we see, you know, several years down the line when she's, you know, slightly older and she can't be a superhero, she actually plays out quite the traditional gender role of, you know, being a stay-at-home mother, cooking and caring for her children, well, in the 1960s. So it's quite a domestic image that, you know, is portrayed of her. And this is all quite ironic because we can see, you know, this kind of boss girl transform into this domestic trope that seems quite unlikely of that happening. But here we are, the 1960s. And furthermore, we see Mrs. Incredible at a point. She thought her husband was cheating on her when he went for a work trip. And Yasmin wrote this, and I completely agree. It's such a typical soap opera trope. Like, all the Asian dramas, all the Taiwanese dramas, you'd be like, oh, they just paint that picture so much. But I think the most incredible thing about Mrs. Incredible, like, as a character, is that a lot was expected of her, because she not only gave up her dreams of, like, saving people for her family and, well, of course, society as well, but she was kind of forced to play this domestic role that she had almost no experience of, as she had to raise three kids basically by herself because her husband was out, you know, working, and when he came home, he didn't really want to deal with his children. And it was quite an unhealthy, like, way of living. And the sad truth is, a lot of women went through this. A lot of women in the 1960s were also quite domestic mothers and would have to balance a lot of things on their plate. And I think it's quite important because, like, we're not superheroes. We all can't just, you know, raise children, cook, clean, and do all the domestic work, because it's a lot. Like, and I don't know, I think it's still quite relevant in today's conversation as well, because at times, like, in a way, at least what I've seen, like, at least in Singapore, sometimes we're expected to be a mother along with, like, pursuing our careers, and it's quite scary. And I think, I don't know, throughout the movie, we see, like, Mrs. Incredible's, like, role develop, and, you know, she kind of gains a balance with her family, and we even see it more in Incredibles 2, which we won't really talk about today.
Yeah. Especially when, like, I think latest research shows that, like, the initial years you spend with your kid is very important as to how the kid will develop later on. So, like, if you're expected to have to raise your kids and also have a job and all of this, you would usually outsource and, you know, put your kids in daycare or something. And again, I'm not up to date with the latest, like, child research, because why would I be? But I know that I know that, like, that must have an impact on, like, the how children cope with, like, their emotion or, like, the amount of comfort or trust they have with their parents and all of that.
That's very true. Yeah, and if you, like, outsource the job, your child becomes reliant not on you, but on, you know, the outsourced help. And exactly. You don't really want that. Won't create that bond with your child.
I've met kids and extended family who are more comfortable with their helpers and their own moms.
Yeah.
And again, you, like, who would you... There's nobody to blame because how are you expected to do both?
Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah. It's tough like that. Well, anyways, well, along those lines, you want to talk about, like, the marriage that Bob and Helen showed?
Yeah. So, in terms of Bob and Helen's marriage, again, I'm not married, so I can't say, but I feel like it portrays or parallels problems in real-life marriage quite well. In what I see in the movie, Bob and Helen had this amazing, adventurous career that, you know, was super exciting and would probably, like, always give them this, like, dopamine hit of saving people and doing all of these cool stuff and being on newspapers and interviews and TV and all of that. And they had to put a stop to it. And they got married and settled down. And I think they also moved 3 or 4 times because they kept slipping up and went back into the old routine. So they just had to move because at that point, superheroes were illegal. And I feel like this perhaps could parallel with real life when couples settle down and they feel like they lose a part of their identity because, you know, you're expected to do, like, married stuff. And again, I'm not married, so I don't know for sure. But I remember watching an episode of Jane the Virgin when, do you remember when Michael and Jane went out to the bar and they were, like, singing Locked Out of Heaven? Because they were, like, they tried to go and do, like, wine tasting or something, like, the usual thing that married couples do.
Yeah.
And then Jane was like, I don't want to be boring just because I'm married now. And Michael was like, you think I'm boring? And then they got drunk, basically.
Yeah. Okay, moving on to Violet. Yasser and I both agree. She's such a relatable teenager. And it's quite, like, typical to see girls at that age trying to, like, find themselves and, you know, being a bit insecure and things like that. She's shy and anxious. She can't look at a crush without blushing hard, which, I don't know, I don't think I've experienced that much, but I do understand. And also, it's nice to see her grow to be more confident in the movie. I think her insecurity stems from, I don't know, maybe her moving around a lot. And I think, like, in that time period, well, I think all girls experience this, but we do feel quite insecure, especially in our teenage years, because we're still trying to find out who we are. And, well, boys do as well, obviously. But there's a lot of, again, expectation on girls. And trying to find ourselves is quite hard. And I think the movie actually, like, displays that quite well for a superhero movie. And, yeah, and with the whole superpowers thing, her superpowers really do project this further.
Regarding Dash, he is what I wrote, a naughty athletic kid, because he really is a naughty athletic kid. And again, he's not allowed to do what he truly loves, which is running, because it's a superpower. And when he does it, he goes overboard and everyone will know. And he finally gets a chance to use this power during the mission. And again, this mission that the Incredibles family got to be part of really does help them balance out, like you said just now, the life that they're supposed to have, quote-unquote, like, domestically, and also this interesting, exciting, extraordinary part of their identities. So I think that in terms of Violet and Dash, they are two kind of cookie-cutter son and daughter in traditional families, right? You've got, like, the over-excited boy and the shy, quiet girl. And I think perhaps because of that, a lot of people could relate to both of these characters because it was such a typical family model, usually, in America. As for Jack-Jack, I have no notes on him because he's just still a baby.
Yeah. We were just talking about how he was just a little bit sadistic, though, but we found it quite funny.
Yeah. Especially with Syndrome at the end.
Oh, yeah. Wait, wasn't there, like, a scene where... I'm not sure if this is one or two in the short, but he, like, shakes a cat or something like that.
That was second.
Grabs a cat by the tail. It was second. Now, talking about the relationship that Violet and Dash share as siblings, we see them take a lot of responsibilities when they realize their parents are in danger. And this is reflected through them fighting on the plane until they realize the plane is going to crash. And they start taking responsibility, like, by allocating tasks on how to get to the island or just trying to survive. And this reflects a lot of, like, normal family units. Like, whenever there's a situation or a crisis, a lot of time that we put family first or we try to prioritize our family because most often family is there for you no matter what. And this is just displayed in, like, as your relationship in The Incredibles. We see Helen and Bob fighting when Bob and Frozen went out to save the world again. It turned into a fight about Dash and sports, as Yasmin said before. Dash is very athletic, and he wants to pursue sports, but he can't because of his superpowers. However, Violet and Dash overheard, and this is a very real experience that was put into kids' movies. Like, parents fight a lot, and a lot of the time, either children are caught in the crosshairs, or we just overhear them. And that's not much we can do. And it just reflects how families actually work. It's not always, like, I don't know, civil conversations. There are arguments and there are fights. And a lot of the time, children are involved with it as well. So that was reflected in their relationship with their parents and also between Violet and Dash, because they both overhear it. And in the Jungle Island, Violet and Dash protecting themselves from Syndrome's weapons without their parents' supervision, and then reunited with them. And I thought the sequence where they fought against all the guards and things like that, where they were fighting together, that was very cute because they were both using their advantages together and they were both working as a team. And ultimately, at the end of the day, I think, like, you know, siblings do work together quite well most of the time.
Movie reminds me of Frozen because it has a complex plot with individual storylines for each character that's very well thought out, and the characters are so distinct from each other that it makes such an exciting movie because of how the different characters react and end up just fitting together as a family. And also, just to note that The Incredibles 2 actually reverses the stereotypical gender roles, in the sense that Mr. Incredibles had to care for the kids while Mrs. Incredible got the new job opportunity. But we won't dive into that because this episode's all about the first one, generally. So, Elena, let's move on to moral and social dilemmas.
Looking beyond the characters, we see that the movie discusses a lot of moral and social dilemmas. And we see this through how superheroes are treated and how society reacts to superheroes being implemented into their social circles in a way. So the core of the movie is some people have powers that others do not, and to deny them the right to exercise those powers or the privileges that accompany them is misguided, cruel, and socially destructive. So that's the main takeaway of, like, the premise of the movie, that superheroes were bad, and that's, and even though they can't help it, they are ostracized. So we see The Incredibles discuss the idea of being morally good and how a lot of people were very critical about it. So Yasmin, do you want to...
Yeah, so a quote that we found was, people do not understand when people do something to be good. So The Incredibles movie suggests that our society doesn't comprehend not having a self-centered intention when doing a good deed. For example, in the movie, people just focused on how much destruction Mr. Incredible, Elastigirl, and Frozone caused instead of the amount of people they saved or the amount of good that they've done into the world. And people end up being threatened by people with this sort of authority, such as people with superpowers. And they automatically feel the need to tear them down, despite the fact that superheroes just want to do good, but people expect that they have some sort of malicious intent to what they're doing. I guess humans just witch hunt things that they don't understand even before weighing out the cost and benefit of it. Do we have an example for that?
The actual witch hunt in Salem.
Oh, okay.
Like the actual witch hunt itself. That's even in science, a lot of the time when someone discovers something new, people didn't like it because they didn't like to change the way they think. And I don't know, especially with science and religion, they didn't like to change not only the way they think, but they don't like to challenge things they do not understand that's different from what they think. Moving on to mediocrity. So the idea of superpowers in the movie creates a divide between people, as we said before. The super and the normal. And in a way that makes people being like superior than others by having certain capabilities. However, we see Mr. Incredible say in the dinner scene, where he says, it's psychotic. People keep coming up with new ways to celebrate mediocrity. But if someone is genuinely exceptional, ellipse. And he's talking about, I don't know, what was it? Dash's fifth grade graduation or something like that. And that's completely true because we see in the movie that people absolutely hated the idea that some people had, you know, gifted natural abilities. Whereas a lot of the time, capitalism also feeds off the idea of like merit and wanting more. And, you know, it feeds off this idea where you have to celebrate every little thing because, you know, you had to buy more, you had to achieve more, you had to feel that, like, I don't know, adrenaline hit of becoming better, even though when you're still kind of mediocre, you're just moving up one grade. Everyone does that. So, in a way, it suggests that people want to be unique and special and to have a power because all these people, they celebrate mediocrity. They celebrate becoming better, even though they can't see what's actually, you know, better. So they want to celebrate moving up a grade, but they don't want to celebrate people who actually save others with, you know, natural gifted abilities. And hence, we impede people who naturally have this power as it seems unjustified. And this is the complex that Syndrome also feels. When everyone's super, no one will be. So Syndrome had this issue where it's like he wanted to be a superhero. He wanted to feel great and special and, you know, praised. But he couldn't because he doesn't have the super power abilities. And despite the action-packed sequences with, like, dazzling superpowers, the movie ends on a bathos where the super family settles for mediocrity by succumbing to not using their superpowers in everyday life and keeping anonymity. So that means that, I mean, I think it's great that they found a balance between their superhero life and their everyday life, as we said before, with like family relationships and Mr. Incredible discovering what it is to really be, to really have masculinity. But it's still sad to see that we still live in a place where we cannot celebrate those who are more gifted than us just because not only we don't understand it, but we are almost envious and we feel like we want to be special too. And this whole idea of mediocrity, lots of people connected it with Nietzsche's idea of an Übermensch, which is a philosophical idea. And this idea was that, you know, there's a perfect human that will have a natural aristocracy of the strong to rule over the weak. So it's a bit like comparing superpowers because a lot of people said that Mr. Incredibles really displayed the Übermensch, which means Superman in German, where I can't remember all four aspects, but a lot of it is like to not be envious, to not drink alcohol for some reason, the idea that God is dead. And it's just to be really, I don't know how to describe it, quite down to earth and quite in denial of most things. And although Bert himself denied, well, the director of the movie, denied writing the movie about Nietzsche's philosophies in mind, it's quite interesting to see that, you know, parallels being drawn, that how we face people with, what we said before, a natural aristocracy or natural authority over others and how we approach that idea, and, you know, comparing how we actually celebrate mediocrity to how we actually celebrate greatness. And yeah, that's a mediocrity.
The foundation or setting for The Incredibles, the world that they're in, is also not as complex as we've seen in other movies. So in terms of the economics and politics of running the, I don't remember if the place has a name, but the land that the movie is set in, it's less complex than you would see in, for example, a movie like Black Panther, which is set more, which is set in a country that hasn't been colonized, and we see the effects of that in terms of the technological advancements and how they've still got a lot of natural resources that haven't been exploited as much. That was a decision that is made very carefully and to portray whatever storylines Black Panther explored. But in The Incredibles, it's not like that. It's a very basic world. We don't really go into the politics of the world, except we know that superheroes have been outlawed. And because it was quite a simple basis, writers had a lot of room to explore with other complex ideas in terms of family dynamics and all of this, because, again, the politics doesn't really involve itself that much into the movie. It was just that superheroes are banned.
So adding on to that, I felt like the movie really acts as a simulation for us to evaluate our actions and reactions to certain consequences. So the movie discusses topics such as technology and our dependency on it. This also ties in with Incredibles 2, but a lot with Incredibles 1 because of technology and how Syndrome wanted to make everyone super, mediocrity, as we said before, and sensationalism through, you know, news and trying to build this narrative that superheroes are bad. And this is all done through a superhero movie, a very digestible medium for children. Hence, it portrays a lot of political ideas and how we think that we'll respond to them through a very simple medium, through a children's movie. And it makes it quite digestible for children to understand. And it's quite interesting because when you watch it, you'll be like, oh yeah, like we shouldn't ostracize people with superpowers because that's bad because they didn't try to do anything bad. But then again, we see a lot of minorities in this day and age. They don't try to do anything bad, but they're still criminalized a lot of the time. So in a way, through a superhero medium and through a very simple world with less complex ideas, well, with less complex setting, we do portray a lot of very political ideas still within the movie, which is very interesting. And I think with the second part of this episode, we've extrapolated a lot of very political or like very worldly ideas. However, whether Bird has the right to determine how people interpret his films is a separate can of worms, but he clearly feels the public projected a politicized reading onto a film that's as much, if not more, about the fear and frustration that comes with aging out of youth's promise. That was a quote from an article that I read, which would be linked. And it just discusses that this ultimately is a children's movie, and Bird didn't intend a lot of these to be drawn out, but it's quite interesting to see that these, you know, storylines that do reflect our society, we can learn a lot from it too.
To conclude, I think the reason The Incredibles did so well as a movie is because its premise is already so inclusive to the idea of a family movie, and it's so fun for kids and adults to be watching something that's so realistic that's often not talked about. Like, for example, that scene where the children overheard the parents fighting. I think a lot of times children are way smarter than their parents give them credit for or adults give them credit for. And as kids, you would overhear things like fights and these things. And I think seeing it portrayed in a movie and explored in a way that's also resolving the issue is very positive for children to see. And I think, again, the choices that the writers made with the characters, again, are very relatable to, even though the movie is set in 1960s and it came out in 2004, you would expect family units to be vastly different. But I would say the traditional gender roles are still there. Like, the girls would still, you know, typically would go through that like emo phase where you're super insecure, like you don't really know your place in the world. And then you've got like this 10-year-old who's like so over energized and excited. That is also something very typical, and I think a lot of the target audience could relate to that and see themselves in the characters. And again, it's an action movie. I think that that's always something that everyone loves. I think we mentioned this in our Frozen episode as well, about how when teasers and trailers were being released, it was more action-packed than like, this is Princess Elsa and this is Princess Anna, and that was just more inclusive to everybody because princesses, I guess, are traditionally marketed for girls and all of that. But again, this was a superhero action movie, so yeah.
I still remember like watching the movie when I was really young. I think it was at home with my parents, and you know, obviously I didn't actually understand a lot of it going on, like, you know, the fights between the parents or like the suspicion that, you know, Mirage was, you know, a mistress of Mr. Incredibles. So it's interesting, like, seeing how I viewed the movie when I was young, which was super exciting. I wanted to be like Violet. I loved her superpower, and having this action-packed movie with a very cool animation style, and to now being able to see like quite a lot of nuances and how the movie portrays superheroes, people who are thought to be better than others or more powerful, being like, you know, in a way suppressed. It's very interesting to see how that could have possibly played out in a world like ours, how the characters are, you know, simulating our behavior and how we would react to these situations. And all in all, it was just a great movie. It's very interesting. I think it appeals to a lot of people, like what you said. And I was just really excited for number two.
If you like this little Disney rant, you can follow us at Dissecting Disney on Instagram and Disney Dissect on Twitter to keep up to date with our latest episodes and endeavors. Tune in every Friday for new episodes.